Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for those listening on www.sportsradio1290, Merry Christmas. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, filling in for Drew Mandel, who is right now in the great state of Kentucky. I'm joined in studio here on this lovely, snowy Christmas day by David Minuk to my right and Michael Remus to my left. We have an action-packed show at 11:15. We're going to be joined by Brendan Leipzig, who will be playing for Team West in the 2011 World Under-17 Hockey Challenge. And at 10:15, in about 15 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Stan Fischler of the MSG Network. Before we get going here today, guys, we have some sad NHL news to pass along before we start the show. This came in via TSN early Friday. The daughter of Pierre Turgeon died in a car crash in New Mexico. So we want to offer our condolences to the Turgeon family before we get going here. So as I mentioned before, we've got two guests coming up. First, we're going to recap Thursday night's games. There weren't any games on Christmas Eve or Christmas, obviously. So we're going to quickly recap Thursday night's games, preview the Boxing Day games, talk a little bit about the two top stories in the NHL world. Obviously, Sidney Crosby extended his point streak to 23 games Thursday night, and the Devils fired John McLean finally. So quickly, we're going to recap the Thursday night games. There was 13 games. You know, every team but four teams were playing on Thursday night. And obviously because of the big break. Probably the biggest game, I mean, the most important game as far as, you know, the move that happened was the Islanders beat New Jersey 5-1 in John McLean's first game. Calgary upset 3-2. Upset Dallas 3-2 in a shootout. Vancouver beat Columbus 7-3. And that game, by the way, there were, I think...
That game was over before the period.
I think there were the Sedin Burrows line combined for 10 points. It was either 9 or 10 points. And probably the other most notable game there was Tampa Bay beat the Rangers. Ryan Malone got the shootout winner in the 11th round. Other winners were Boston, Florida, Tampa, Montreal, St. Louis, Ottawa. Holy, I better take a little bit of a breather here. Minnesota, LA over Edmonton in a shootout, and then the Sharks beat our beloved Phoenix Coyotes 4-1.
You've left off the most important game of the night, though.
Did I? Which one did I leave off?
The Capitals and Penguins.
I didn't realize they were playing.
Yes, well, unfortunately, yeah, they did play, and it was a phenomenal game.
I thought we were going to save that maybe for, you know, for the... HBO segment, but yes, that's right. Pittsburgh beat Washington 3-2. Sidney Crosby extended his point streak to a ridiculous 23 games.
With a beauty. It was an absolute...
With a beauty goal and a beauty assist to was it Pascal? No, it was Chris Kunitz.
Yeah,
right?
Kunitz.
And then Pascal Dupuis got the winner. So we are going to now switch to our top stories of the week. And as we mentioned, it's got to be Sidney Crosby extending his point streak to 23 games. You know, in light of the HBO documentary and all that, which, you know, now is the second episode, how ridiculous is it, you know, what he's doing right now, Dave?
It's unbelievable. Like, his ability is... I just can't get over how... And, you know, the funny thing is, the goals he's scoring and the assists he's getting are phenomenal. It's not like he's just getting, incidental assists or anything like that. He's scoring his goal against the Capitals, which is an absolutely just gorgeous goal. And his play is phenomenal. Like, he's leading the team because, I mean, think about it. Malkin was out with the knee injury, and he's elevated his play this season, to another level.
Crosby's got 60 points on the season now, 29 goals, 31 assists. Michael, is he going to hit 130 points? What do you think?
You know, it's looking pretty likely that he's going to get up there in that range. You know, especially now that Malkin is back and healthy, Sidney Crosby can really step up his game here. You know, Malkin Monday night scored 5 points against the Rangers, and they're really playing these guys, you know, together quite a bit. you know, the sky's the limit for this kid. You know, he's shown us what he can do on the ice, what character he has off the ice. There's limitless possibilities.
It's funny that you called him a kid. I think you guys are the same age, right? 23?
I'm actually older than him.
Okay, by a little bit.
by a few months.
You're still a kid, though. So, you know, Sidney Crosby right now is obviously, you know, he's leading, you know, the points race, I think, by about 11 or 12 points over Stamkos and St. Louis or something like that. He's way ahead of Ovechkin. But let's talk a little bit about what he's doing with the line mates he's got. He's playing most of the season. He's been playing with Chris Kunitz or, you know, Pascal Dupuis or Max Talbot. I think what you hear a lot about when Sidney Crosby's, you know, brilliance is mentioned is the fact that he makes players better as opposed to just looking better or playing better all the time, which maybe Alex Ovechkin doesn't get as much credit for that, for making his line mates better. But I think Sidney Crosby does a better job. But how remarkable is it what he's doing with, let's be honest, we're talking about guys that aren't, you know, prolific goal scorers.
No, I don't like to, you can't use the Gretzky reference yet with Crosby. I mean, he's definitely this generation's, it's looking like he's this generation's Gretzky probably, but the truth is his elevation of his players who are generally, I mean, you're looking at these guys are like second and third line players who are playing on the first line with one of the great, and again, Gretzky did this also. So, I mean, when you see that to me is the true testament to someone who is a phenomenal player and elevates his game when he's not just, as you just said, not someone who just makes himself look good, but he makes his line mates look good and he elevates their level of play. And if you have that ability to take guys who, and you turn them into like who guys, I mean, again, I don't know what Kunitz's numbers were before. I'd have to look it up, but like the truth is, you know, it's like pre-Crosby and post-Crosby, you know, like playing with him. And the truth is after you've played with someone like that consistently, your game level goes up. And your points go up. And you know, the truth is, if you took those guys off of Crosby's line and you put them with someone else, they're going to go back to being second and third level players. But they've elevated their game likely as a result of his play. And just one more thing to add to what you were just talking about in terms of his age. It's something I find absolutely remarkable.
He's not even 24 years old.
No. And you know? What he's doing at that age is unbelievable.
I think he already has 500 points and 200 goals. Like it's, He'll easily have 300 goals and 1,000 points way before he hits 30 years old, which is ridiculous when we're talking about really good NHL players that are, you know, hitting their mid 30s and, you know, getting to 1,000 points, which is in itself a ridiculous accomplishment. I don't think that he's going to get close to, I mean, if you look at Gretzky's numbers and then you look at his point totals, he has 2,857 points.
Yeah.
I mean, that number is, it's almost as difficult to comprehend as pi.
The one thing I will say is like, it's not, obviously these aren't the go-go 80s anymore. And
right.
Although occasionally you will be confused by that because, you know, like you saw the Philly game a couple weeks ago when it was like an 8-7 game and you will see now it's opened up more to the point where there is higher scoring games. We're not having those 2-1, 1-0, 3-2 games anymore as often, and there are higher scoring. So that has a lot, as Michael just said, you know, the Malkin had a 5-point night the other night. That's very much in the same vein as like an 80s scoring where guys were having 5 points per night and it wasn't such a shocking occurrence.
You know, Ezzy, I'm really impressed that you can rattle off that Gretzky at, what is it, 2857, not even looking at a computer right now.
But the reason why I know that is because when Gretzky's career ended, they had, you know, this poster that had all of his numbers, and I always remember all the numbers, 894 were his goal totals, and the stat I'll never forget too was he has more assists than the next person has points, which is Gordie Howe.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And that's just, for me, you know, being a huge hockey fan, it's just something that you don't forget. It's just, it's remarkable. It really is remarkable. But, you know, segueing from Sidney Crosby's point streak, we want to just quickly touch on the other top story, because we're going to get Stan Fischler on here in about 6 minutes and go to break in about three. The other top story has to be the Devils firing head coach John McClain and replacing him with Jacques Lemaire, who was the coach of the team last year and was the coach of the team for 5 years, you know, in the mid 90s there, including the 95 cup win. You know, I'll throw it to you guys right now. We talked about this last week, you know, whether John McClain should be fired. What do you guys think of this firing? Is it going to mean anything? Are the Devils still going to finish last place in the league? Was it really a bad time 2 days to before Christmas. What do you guys think?
You know, you never want to see a coach get fired. You know, it's really unfortunate situation over there in New Jersey. But it looks like the players, you know, they kind of stopped trying. They'd given up. A change needed to be made. And they always say it's easier to fire the coach than to, you know, replace a whole team. Maybe they'll respond to Jacques Lemaire. But, I mean, something had to be done. And Lou Lamoriello didn't have many options. And he's going to go with the guy that he knows.
How bad is it, though, Dave, two days before Christmas? I mean, the timing is pretty bad.
It's not the best time. It doesn't make it for a very happy Christmas at the McLean household, unfortunately. But you know what? It's interesting because I can't remember the quote from Kovalchuk when they asked him about McLean's firing.
And when he said it's not my fault.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
It was his fault.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, really? It's not your fault? You played absolutely terribly the entire season. And what I think is even more remarkable now, even more than this firing, is the fact that the discussion is heating up, and of course this is just online, but the discussion is heating up about trading Brodeur. And Brodeur is basically saying all the right things. Like, I'm not thinking about it. We can still do something. And, he's talking about how, he wants to play with the Devils forever.
Yep.
But I just think it's remarkable that they're talking about trading him at this point.
And it's preposterous because everyone knows that Martin Brodeur took a hometown discount. He makes $5.2 million. He's, in my opinion, the greatest goalie of all time. He could easily make $9 million a year. It's well known that he signed a long-term contract at $5 million when he could be making at least $3, maybe $4 million more because he likes New Jersey. He's had 3 Stanley Cups in New Jersey. It's preposterous. He's not going anywhere. Most likely he's got 1, maybe 2 years more left, and he's not going anywhere. Good talk. New Jersey had to fire their head coach, but unfortunately they're way behind right now to make the playoffs. So we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, Stan Fischler of the MSG Network, he covers the Rangers, the Devils, and the Islanders. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Christmas Special on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's time for the second segment here. We're trying to still get Stan Fischler on here. We're probably going to have him on very briefly. So what we're going to do is go right now to NHL News and Notes.
NHL News and Notes.
Okay. Probably the biggest story in Toronto, aside from the team being horrible, was the second Wafflegate incident. Now at least we have a face to behind the waffle, I guess, if you want to say that. It was announced that 31-year-old Toronto Maple Leafs fan Joseph Joey Robb, who threw a box of waffles, which were Eggo brand, on the ice during Wednesday night's Thrashers Leafs game, has been permanently banned from all Maple Leafs sports and entertainment events at the Air Canada Centre, BMO Field, if you wanted to check out a Toronto FC game. And also he's banned from Rico Coliseum if you wanted to see your Marlies game. He actually has a court appearance next month to face mischief charges. And, you know, I thought I'd also throw in the fact that they still haven't found the first waffle thrower of that night or the original waffle thrower of the first night, even though there's some rumors that this guy, Joey Robb, was the original guy. Do you guys think this is too harsh? Because I have some strong feelings that I think that this guy, you know, should have been maybe banned for a year, but he's banned for life.
I think they should let go his ego because this is just ridiculous. The penalty is way too harsh. I agree. A year would have been sufficient. I think also, though, it's completely symbolic. I don't really think that there's anything you can do to prevent people from coming in because they're not going to distribute his picture. The reality is that, like,
there's going to be a picture, like, beside the concession stand.
Yeah, like, that's the whole point. Like, what, you're going to stop, like, everybody who looks like this Joseph Robert? Like, it's the most preposterous thing ever. And it's just, like, it's symbolic. Like, they're basically saying, we're going to make an example of this guy, but the reality is, you're not going to prevent him from going to future, like, oh, someone's going to be walking, he's going to go and buy a waffle, and someone's going to be like, hey, wait a second, you're that waffle guy, I'm calling security.
Did they maybe do this guy a favor, though? like maybe by banning him, they're preventing him from seeing, you know, maybe not, I can't speak for the Toronto FC or the Marlies, but maybe by banning him, aren't they, you know, preventing him from seeing really bad hockey?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but if you're a Leafs fan, I mean, you're going to want to go support the team. They sell out, you know, just about every game. But my only question is, I mean, how is this guy bringing a box of waffles into the stadium? Does he have them under his shirt?
I know, he had a box. It's not like he had just a little plastic package with two or three waffles. He had a box of waffles.
Like, he threw the entire box. Like, he didn't even take them out individually and frisbee them on.
I think probably the biggest problem is the fact that he did it during the play, like the, while the play was
and
live.
That's the whole thing, that he threw it on during the play.
That was a pretty stupid thing. Like, having been to a lot of Red Wings games, I can say, like, when people throw the octopus on the ice, it's always during a break, like the break and play. Like, they won't actually do it during the play while the play is going on. And it's a fairly sanctioned event in Detroit. I mean, people do it, and then it's kind of like, you know, you're not supposed to do it, but they do it. But I mean, going back to this idea that he's been banned, like, I remember, I mean, this is not necessarily hockey related, but it's in that sort of vein. I was at a Detroit Tigers game, and a guy went streaking on the field. And similar to this guy, he was escorted out, and he was told that he was going to face a ban. He was told he was going to face charges. And interestingly enough, he actually communicated with me, and I found out that his charges were dropped, and they never actually prosecuted him because they realized.
Did you have anything to do with those charges being dropped, or was that?
No, I had no legal involvement in that aspect. But
for our listeners that don't know, Dave Manuk recently completed a law degree in Michigan. So, just for a little tidbit there.
Tiny bit of info, but anyway,
I like to throw those in.
But
little profile
is,
in there.
Yeah, but the point is that nothing happened to this guy, and so it was like I said, it was largely symbolic. They take him out. They say you're going to be banned. They say you're going to be prosecuted because, of course, they want to prevent future instances of this happening. So, I don't know that this. I think what you said. Did they do him a favor? Not in the sense that, you know, they banned him from Leafs so he doesn't have to watch bad hockey, but really they made this guy almost a celebrity because the truth is nobody obviously knew who he was, and now he's the waffle guy.
Right.
So now he's kind of, it's kind of a mock celebrity, but the reality is he's got his 15 minutes right now because of what the Leafs have done.
So, you know, as far as the waffle throwing, the waffle itself, the food item waffle, you mentioned the, you know, symbology and what banning him symbolizes and all that. Why waffles? Because nobody has been able to figure out, you know, there was a reason behind the rats being thrown on the ice in the mid-90s in Florida, right. And the octopus, there was a reason for it. Mm-hmm. You know, what was it,
eight victories to get to the Stanley Cup back then.
Eight victories to get to the Stanley Cup. Why waffles? What do you think it could be?
Because they're delicious.
I don't know. I wanted to throw, you know, maybe something that tastes good.
Yeah, I mean, sweet. Food. Yeah, it's weird because maybe what I was thinking was, maybe this guy doesn't like waffles, and he was trying to tell him waffles stink and the Leafs stink. But we're going to move on here with our next NHL news and notes point. In a legal battle that has lasted years, Michael Giron and Bruce Levinson have emerged as the primary owners of the Atlanta Thrashers and Atlanta Hawks. A major point of dispute in this case was Steve Belkin's 30% ownership stake and its value. Basically, you know, this group that is called Atlanta Spirit LLP, Giron and Levinson, they've now bought out Steve Belkin. Originally, Steve Belkin wanted to actually buy their stake out, and then there was a dispute about how much his 30% ownership stake was about. So what do you guys think this means? Because now there's a little bit more certainty. Obviously, they're still looking for an investor in Atlanta, and there's still some issues there. But, you know, what do you guys think this means? Because Atlanta right now is competing with the Caps for first in the Southeast.
You know, if you talk to Drew Mandel of Legal Curve, he'll tell you that now that their owner situation is a bit more settled, they'd be more free to sell the team and move it here. But I don't know if that's the case. I mean, Atlanta, they're doing very well this year. They're primed, you know, maybe to get into the playoff run. There's a lot of young, upcoming talent. And
Big Buff.
And they got Dustin Byfuglien, who's playing out of his mind this year.
He really is, yeah.
And, you know, maybe someone will step up and invest some money because, if you put a winner on the ice, the fans will come out.
You know, Dave, a huge part of this, and I wasn't aware of this. Obviously, we're not in Atlanta, but the Philips Arena, Philips, huge company, mm-hmm. They signed a 20-year lease in 1999 when that arena opened. And apparently, if one of those teams moves, it's in the clause that Philips has the right to then remove their name from the naming rights, which apparently was a $100 to $200 million deal or something, which is a huge amount of money. It's something like $10 million yeah. a year or something. So do you think it's maybe unrealistic for us to think that, you know, Atlanta can move, or is that not, you know, a deciding factor?
You know
factor?
What? I think the truth is that you can always buy yourself out of any agreement if you need, if need be. And the, and the reality is that there's, I believe it's $8 to $10 million a year that, that yep. they receive as a result of the naming rights. And the question you have to look at is, how much money are you losing over those naming rights? I mean,
now, what are you paying $8 or $10 million for if nobody's going to see the game
that's
and
right.
the team's
now,
losing money, right?
That, so that's the way you have to look at it. Like, are you making $8 million because you have the Atlanta Hawks and the Atlanta Thrashers in the building, but are you losing $20 million a season on the NHL? And the truth is, could you fill 40 nights in Phillips Arena? And I, you know what, I have to tell you, I've done a lot of reading about Atlanta and the fans mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Yep. The thing that bothers me the most, I can't stand listening to, is if there's a winner, the fans will come. Well, what happens if there's a loser? You know what I mean? Like, sure, but the Thrashers, I have to tell you, have put up with a loser for a long time. They've
right.
had one yeah. playoff appearance in 10 years.
No wins. They got swept by the Rangers.
They got swept by
year.
The Rangers. Yeah. And it, you know, so I have to say, like, their fan base, and if you look at their numbers, like, you know, I'm not as anti-Atlanta as a lot of people in Canada seem to be, because if you look at their numbers, they were drawing over 16,000 consistently for a number of years. And then, you know, it went down when
then
the fans.
Healy left.
Yeah, and, you know, and the truth is, like, they, yeah. look, they've seen their superstars leave.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, they're basically now Chicago of the South with all their additions from the Blackhawks. But they've got a nice cohesive group. They've got great goaltending. The, ownership base. Now, the ownership base is a little bit more dicey because it seems from what I've read that the guys seem more interested in, they're more basketball guys. And so, like, as Michael said, that they're looking for outside hockey ownership because really their interest is basketball primarily, and the hockey is a secondary.
And college sports.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, no, I'm talking about the ownership group, not the fans in general. And the other,
right,
the other big complaint I've heard from fans, or I've read from fans, I should say, is the idea that they have to go downtown to Phillips Arena. Because it's kind of, I've heard that it's not in the best area, and I've heard various complaints.
You know what I always think when that argument is raised? Do you want the arena to be moved? I mean, what I'm trying to say is, the people that say that they would attend games but don't because where the arena is, isn't there a problem in Tampa Bay with Tropicana Field? Because in Tampa Bay, Florida, the field is in a bad area, and that's why they always said the Rays couldn't draw any fans. Also, the Rays were terrible for many years, but I mean, the arena is where it is. So, yeah, you might not want to go to that area, but that's where it is. So if you're not supporting a team because you're afraid for your safety, well, why don't you push your city councilors or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it's like the arena isn't on wheels. You can't move the arena to a suburb, you know?
Like, the truth is, I can tell you that we would drive like over an hour to go see Red Wings games, and we'd park in downtown Detroit. And, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about dangerous cities, everybody references Detroit. And I got to tell you, going to a hockey game, you're with like 17 to 20,000 other people. So generally, you know, it's the herd mentality. Generally, there's safety in numbers. And when there's a lot of people, it's generally you're not in any real danger. At least that's what I've found going to Red Wings games.
Okay, good points, guys. I just want to quickly throw in here two last points for NHL news and notes. Earlier this week on Wednesday, Pavel Datsyuk injured himself against the Vancouver Canucks. They won 5-4 in OT, but was it worth it? Because Datsyuk's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with a broken bone in his hand. And obviously Thursday night, this came in late. Derek Roy is most likely done for the season after he tore his quadricep muscle in a loss to the Florida Panthers. So we're going to take a quick break right now. We're going to try, hopefully, get Stan Fischler of the MSG Network on at 10:30. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Christmas special on Sports Radio 1290. Absolutely love this song. This is one of my favorite Led Zeppelin songs. When the Levee Breaks, Tim, I love how you play this song for me. By the way, Tim, you're doing a great job. We're having a little bit of difficulty getting a hold of Stan Fischler in New York. But that's okay. We're going to try to get him on next segment. Welcome back to the special Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, sometimes that happens. Sometimes, you know, you have a little difficulty getting a guest. Life happens, so we're going to move on to our next segment here. We're going to move on to the 2011 IIHF World Junior Hockey Championship preview here. The tournament starts tomorrow, Boxing Day. Obviously, here in Canada, we hear about this tournament pretty much for, what, 5 weeks, 6 weeks leading up to it. This year's tournament is in Buffalo, New York, and I believe also, where is it? Is it not Lewiston? I forget the other city, but it's mainly in Buffalo at the HSBC Arena. The United States defending champions, of course, everyone remembers last year, John Carlson scored in overtime. You know, Canada, you know, it was a valiant effort. Jordan Eberle tied it up, with that crazy goal. The U.S. defending champions, they've got 16 first or second round draft picks, 8 returning players. You know, Canada is the underdog, which is ridiculous considering that we won 5 golds in a row and pretty much came within a second of 6 golds in a row. As far as this year's team, guys, based on the fact that Canada outscored their opposition pretty bad in these pre-tournament competition games, do you guys still think that, you know, this is Canadian paranoia and, you know, we're still going to end up at the end of this winning it? You know, Michael, I'll throw it to you. What do you think of this year's, the makeup of this year's team?
You know, Canada's looked pretty good in the exhibition games so far. I don't know how much stock you can put into those, but looks like Canada's, you know, coming in at the underdog, and sometimes that can really motivate a team. You know, when other people are saying, oh, U.S. is the favorite, they'll really push you, you know, to do, you know, maybe play above what you're able to. I think, you know, Canada's, they've gone to this knowing that, you know, not the favorite. And they've assembled a team of, you know, they're going to play a different hard-nosed style of hockey. And, you know, we can only see what go. I know, hopefully, well, you know, we'll see them in the gold medal game, but you never know what could happen.
You know, as we mentioned before, U.S. is defending champions. Canada lost, finished second, won the silver in Saskatoon last year. You know, a lot has been made, you know, out of the fact that Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Derek Stepan, Cam Fowler, those guys aren't playing. But if you look at, you know, just the draft picks, you know, we were talking about this off air. The U.S. has, you know, 16 first and second round draft picks, and it looks like almost all of these guys are going to get a shot in the NHL. Do you think, you know, we should be focusing on all of the good young hockey talent that's coming out of the U.S. and Canada instead of focusing on, you know, which NHLers aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, especially coming from the U.S. side, because obviously the NHL is always looking to expand in the U.S., I think it's really important that you look at some of the places that these players from the U.S. hockey team are coming from, and they're not the standard northern markets, you know, like Michigan, Minnesota, New York, that sort of thing. They're coming from like Texas, and we've got a guy from Vegas, and we've got 4 players from California, and that's really the important thing, is that the development of hockey is right across the board in the States, not just in the markets that they've always come from. So it is important to see that all you've got a lot of talent on both the American and Canadian sides. I hate to say it's becoming like almost like the women's gold in the sense that you always expect it's just going to be Canada and the U.S. and possibly, you know, like Russia or Finland could knock someone out, or Sweden in this case, but like, you know, It's becoming a little bit more like that, in that these two teams are the two teams to beat.
Well, you know, it's funny, if you look at the over the last 10 years, the U.S. still only has 3 medals, and it's actually still Canada, Russia, Finland, 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. So I mean, the U.S. yes, they won the gold last year, but if you look at, you know, maybe the 05, 06, 07 World Juniors, The Americans were having some problems, and they definitely have improved their development program from the midget level on. But the U.S., I think we should still not get too excited in the grand scheme of things, because the U.S., I agree, is now finally starting to, you know, show some bear some fruit from the early 90s when they stepped up their hockey program after the World Cup. But let's talk a little bit about Team Canada here. You know, as mentioned, Team Canada only has 4 returning players, 3 of which are defensemen. You've got Saskatoon's Braden Shen on forward, and then you've got Captain Ryan Ellis, who this is his 3rd tournament. You've got Calvin DeHaan and Jared Cowan. Once again, you know, a lot of people are saying that this team is lacking the big goal scorer, but I think that's a little bit false, because if you look at the team, almost all these guys are either captains or assistant captains of their junior teams, and, you know, have 20 goals or whatever. You know, two guys that are probably going to be counted on the most for offense, on for offense, are going to be Sean Couturier, who is a projected top two, top three pick in the 2011 draft, and then Ryan Johansson, who scored two goals against Finland in the last competition game. You know, Michael, do you think it even matters? And do you think it even matters who scores, knowing that 13 different guys scored in those three games? Or, you know, is it, should we start realizing that, you know, maybe these guys, Couturier and Johansson, for instance, they scored goals in the preseason. Those are going to be the new Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle, you know?
You know, it really doesn't matter who scores, you know, as long as everyone's contributing. You know, it's good for team mentality when you're not having to rely on that one big guy. Everyone feels that, you know, it's every shift, it's their time to put the puck in the net. And, you know, if everyone is skating hard and working together, it's a team game here. So, you know, that's just how it goes.
The interesting thing is that these guys, and I hate to use that cliche lunch pail mentality, but that's both teams seem to be fighting it out to see who can have that. I read an article where both the American coach said, oh, the Canadians are being described as lunch pail. Well, we're lunch pail. We're hardworking. So, you know, and the interesting thing is, look, they don't have a Taylor Hall, but they didn't win with Taylor Hall last year. I mean, obviously they were close, but they didn't win with Taylor Hall last year. So the truth is, this group of forwards, and I mean, I saw that goal Braden Schenn scored the other day. It was an absolute beauty. And these guys can score. I mean, these guys can put the puck in the net. So I'm not too concerned.
I want to just quickly talk about two things about the World Junior Tournament that once again is going to be in Buffalo, New York this year. Last night, James Duffy on TSN mentioned that 60% of the tickets being sold in Buffalo were to Canadians. And if you remember, the last time a World Junior Tournament was in the U.S., it was in Grand Forks. I actually went down there with my sister and saw a bunch of Winnipeggers. I believe it was at the Ralph Engelstad Arena, which you guys are familiar with in Grand Forks, North Dakota, just a beautiful arena. But it was made, a lot was made of the fact that, you know, the reason the tournament did so well because it was all Winnipeggers or all Canadians. You know, is this just another sign that we basically care about this tournament when no one else does?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it just shows passion. I think it just shows the passion of the fans and that people are willing to pay to see the young next group of superstars that are going to come into the NHL. So, you know, if you have an opportunity to see some of the best hockey, young hockey players in the market, why not go? Especially, you know, tickets aren't exorbitantly priced.
Right.
So, you know, you have an opportunity to see some very exciting hockey, some young players. I mean, I remember when I went to the World Juniors here in Winnipeg.
Right. 1999.
Yeah. And yep. It was like
Roberto Luongo.
Yeah. And it was like, I mean, you have a chance to see very good hockey. And, so that's why I think, you know, Canadians, and obviously there'll be a significant number of Americans as are, but the Canadians happen to snap up 60% of the tickets. That's just the way it is.
You know, a lot of people say this tournament is, you know, like March Madness for hockey.
It is, yeah.
And you really see a lot of up-and-coming stars. You know, I still have my program from the 99 World Junior Hockey Championship, and it's amazing the players that come up throughout all the years. But, you know, especially for people who are in, you know, Toronto with close proximity to Buffalo, you're not going to want to pay, you know, however much it is to see the Maple Leafs, who aren't very good. So you might as well make the hour drive to Buffalo to see some great quality hockey.
And for our listeners who, you know, weren't in Winnipeg or don't remember back to 1999, I don't expect everyone to remember back then, but Russia ended up beating Canada in the gold medal game. Artem Chubarov got the winning goal.
In no one, right?
Maxim Afanasyev was another one of the superstars for the Russian team that year, but I remember Canada tied it up late in the third period, and then Russia won, and that was at the old Winnipeg Arena. And that were you there, Tim, as well? Okay. Yeah, that was quiet. After that goal scored, that was a quiet arena because that was really loud before that goal was scored. Yeah, go ahead, Tim. Go ahead, Dave.
I was just gonna say, you know what? That was one of my favorite games to ever have gone to. Like, I just had such a good time, and you know what's funny? I was with a buddy. We just happened at the last minute to decide to go down. We bought tickets, and the energy in the old Winnipeg Arena was just phenomenal. And that, I mean, despite the outcome, it was just an absolutely amazing game to be at.
Okay, so we're gonna take a quick break here. When we come back, we have a lot more to talk about here. We're still gonna try to get Stan Fischler on in New York. We're having a little bit of difficulty, you know, getting through to him, so we're going to try maybe once, maybe twice more. We're going to take a break, and we will be back on the special Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the special Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays. You know, hopefully you're including us in your Christmas morning today. We're still having trouble getting a hold of Stan Fischler of MSG. He's based in New York. You know, we're going to try to get him on one more time. We have about 15 minutes left here in the first hour. We're going to have Brendan Leipzig on at 11:15. Hopefully we'll be able to get through to Brendan, but I did talk to him yesterday and he's excited to come on. So Brendan Leipzig is center for the Portland Winterhawks, and he will be playing for Team West at the 2011 World Under-17 Hockey Challenge, which will take place in Winnipeg and Portage-la Prairie, Manitoba. There's 10 teams, 5 from Canada. So we're going to now move on to our next segment, which is going to cover something that, you know, we've all watched and we've all, you know, we're really passionate about. And that's the HBO 24/7, Penguins Capitals Road to the Winter Classic, series. Episode 2 debuted Wednesday night. I had a chance to watch it last night. And I thought it was better than the first one. What did you guys think of that episode? I'll throw it to Michael first.
You know, I watched the first one, and I was, you know, pretty excited about it. I made sure that I was up at 11 p.m. watching the second one Wednesday night. And the access that they have on this show, it's unbelievable. They take you in the locker room. They show you the trainers. They show you the injuries. You know, they show you the referees in the referee room. You know, the one image that'll last in my mind after watching the first episode is obviously, you know, every interview with Matt Hendricks, you know, his black eye, the blood in his eye, and the stitches under his eye. You know, these guys are really go through a war out there on the ice.
It was really interesting, too, Dave, to see, you know, Alexander Ovechkin and Matt Hendricks in, you know, in kind of the medical room at the Verizon Center, and kind of see Coach Bruce Boudreau interacting with them and, you know, telling Ovechkin that he should maybe not fight to earn his living, and he was telling Hendricks that maybe he should try to go a few games. You know, what have been your favorite parts, you know, so far about this series?
Unlike Bruce Boudreau's mother, I enjoyed his profanity-laced tirades against the team, you know, to kind of motivate them, not that it helped. Yeah, you know what, actually, I found a lot of stuff interesting. I actually have found this whole series to be absolutely riveting. I've sat and watched every minute. You can't turn away. If you're not a fan of hockey, this will make you a fan of hockey. It's HBO does such a good job on these documentaries, and the two moments that I think specifically from the second episode that I really enjoyed, one was Mario Lemieux coming out at 1 o'clock to play.
Unbelievable.
Like, that just blew me away. Like, then they're like, okay, well, we have a former, you know, or sorry, anybody who's a member of the Penguin staff can come down and play a pickup game of shinny. And so they're playing at Console Energy in Pittsburgh, and all of a sudden you see Mario Lemieux on the ice, you know, with Dan Bylsma and everybody, with Phil Bourque.
And you don't expect it. For anybody that hasn't seen it, I mean, you don't know that the coaches have this game, which is in itself is cool, but you just don't expect all of a sudden in the clip, Mario Lemieux, the arguably the second greatest hockey player, obviously the great one is the best, but
yeah.
Or Bobby Orth, let's say he's one of the top five.
I see.
But you don't expect Mario Lemieux to be in this doc at all.
No.
I mean, he's the owner, but you just don't expect him to watch him. And he pulls a crazy move in the thing, and it just gets you really excited.
But again, you know what? The funny thing about that is that it showed how passionate he is still about winning. Like, he was still trying to set guys up. He's still trying to score. And do you see that move he pulled?
Like, he looks good. He's 45 years old, and he looks like he could still play in the NHL. I'm not even joking.
The only thing I found hard to believe was that they said he hasn't played in 5 years or something like that. And I thought it was, you know, somewhat odd. The other thing I really picked up from the series, from the second episode that I enjoyed, was watching the referees have a beer after the game.
Yeah, did you notice one of the referees didn't take a beer?
No,
there was two referees and two linesmen. And did you see it, Tim?
No.
Okay, I always think that when you nod, Tim, that you're saying, like, you've got a microphone too. You can go on the air here.
But you know, the interesting thing I found about it was the fact that it looked. As I said to Richard, actually, who I was watching the game with, watching the series with, I said this could be going on in any rink in North America. In any rink in North America, you could be watching referees after a game having a beer. So it really, you know, it was unbelievable that this is after an NHL game, but it seemed, you know what I mean, it was just interesting how it was no different than a you know.
Oh, okay.
So anyways, that was my thought.
You know, even you know, I coached a hockey team last year. I know, Ezra, you're coaching a team right now. Even the
first place team, I might add.
Okay, well,
yeah.
Even the speeches from the coaches between periods. You know, I coached a team that, you know, we didn't win too many games last year, and I had a lot of the same experiences as Boudreaux. You know, trying to pump up a team, and you saw that in the first episode. Boudreaux, you know, he kind of got on his guys and was angry, you know, for them not playing well. But, you know, in the second episode, he kind of had a more change, a more positive attitude. And they showed how he focused on the positives. And he always tried to tell guys, you know, if we keep playing like this, we can keep going. So, you know, that was a kind of interesting change of attitude from Boudreaux. And, you know, while you guys are busy over there, a few other moments that I enjoyed. I know Alexander Ovechkin at the trainer's table. You know, completely stark naked under a towel, getting a nice rub down and getting his hamstring work on. And you could see, you know, the pain in his face that he was, you know, he was really tight in that area and they were stretching him out pretty good.
Was it Ovechkin or who was it who had the bag around his ankle and it was like full of blood? Like it was absolute. Was it Ovechkin or Hendricks?
I don't know, but I don't know that. I know, you know, they showed Mike Green and he had this huge like sleeve on his knee.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just a fascinating series. Like, you just can't, you're riveted to your seat. And the best part about HBO, of course, is that there's no commercials. So you're not being interrupted. You're absolutely just, you're just sitting there watching it and you just can't get over how good the production is.
I think the little touches too of the show are what makes it really good. Like, you know, Craig Adams' son, you know, pointing out all the Pittsburgh Penguins on the walls and just the little camera shots and editing tricks that they use. But actually right now we're going to be joined on the air right now by the voice of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, Paul Edmonds. Paul, are you there?
Morning, gentlemen. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas,
and happy holidays.
Yes, Merry Christmas to you as well.
Thanks.
Where are you celebrating Christmas today?
Well, I've got my youngest boy in the truck and we're going to get my oldest boy to bring him back home for Christmas morning, so okay. I've been listening to the show, and I just want to let you know you guys are in a long line of people that have been stiffed by Stan Fischler, I can tell you that.
Oh, really? Okay, well...
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I listened. You know, I was going to do my best Stan Fischler imitation, but I'd rather talk to you about that documentary that HBO is showing, because like you guys, I've really enjoyed it, the two episodes that have been shown, and you've made some really good points about what's been interesting about it, and one of the things for me has certainly been the way they evaluate each guy after every game.
Right.
You know, Dalsma is in there with his assistants, and he doesn't get there till 9 o'clock in the morning. The assistants have already gone through the tape, you know, to talk about where this guy was, positioning, all of that. They're going down each player, good, bad, or fair in the group. And, you know, it's just been really riveting TV for me because if you've been around hockey – at any level, say from, you know, AAA midget up to junior, major junior, and into the pro ranks, that's the way it is. And you're really getting a real good cross-section of how the game is evaluated and the expectations that are placed on each player every night. And I've just really enjoyed it. And I'll be honest with you, so is my wife.
Well, yeah, no, it's funny. I know Dave wants to make a point here, but what we were talking about was, you know, the types of situations that we're, you know, able to see through this documentary are really amazing. And I agree, you know, it's a lot of people don't realize that these coaches are, this is a 24-hour a day job and they analyze everything when they're analyzing Max Talbot's every shift and rating him. And it's funny. I don't remember who it was. I think it might be Matt Cook. I think at one point they don't even want to rate him because I think they're upset with his play, but
Paul, what do you think of the fact that how great an occurrence was it that Pittsburgh was on this phenomenal run, you know, of 12 games in a row. And then, of course, the Capitals were on the big losing streak. So how fortuitous was it that during this run up to the Winter Classic, both these teams are on unbelievable streaks respectively?
Well, very interesting because, you know, we'll see how Washington maybe pulls out of it in the, you know, the last game they won. To get out of it, and it was like they won the Stanley Cup. The other thing that was interesting about that, and I'm not demagoguing your question, but, you know, after the win, Pittsburgh gives out that shovel. Yep. You know, after the win in Washington, they celebrate ending the 8 or 9 game losing skid, and they give out the hard hat.
Yep.
That stuff was really cool. And it seemed, you know, to me, like Malkin won it, and then I forget who the Washington Capitol guy.
I think it was Matthew Perreault.
That's right. It was Matthew Perreault. He had a goal and assist in that game.
Yep.
Like they genuinely, and you could see it, genuinely were were glad, pleased, elated that they had been selected to win, respectively, the shovel or the hard hat. And you know, that to me was really cool in the whole episode.
And I think you're exactly right. And I think for, you know, us, especially in Winnipeg and Canadian hockey fans who grew up playing hockey, and then, you know, some of us have been coached and, you know, taken it to the next level. But I think you start to see the passion, you know, and it's not just the F-bombs, but you start to see the passion of these guys as they prepare before the games and they get themselves pumped up. And, you know, whether they're playing, you know, soccer or they're doing push-ups or they're taping their stick. You know, Sidney Crosby said he always does the same thing before every game, if you haven't seen it, where he tapes his hockey stick. I don't want to give it away too much, but, you know, it's amazing. I think the passion for hockey that comes from the players themselves comes through, and you realize that, yeah, you know, these guys are making $5-7 million a year, but they want to win. They want to get themselves out of a losing streak if they're in one, and they want to continue winning if they're on a winning streak.
No more poignant than, I believe it was about halfway through the show, Washington was about, I think, 7 or 8 games deep in the slide, and it was in between periods. They were down 3-0. It was after the second, and one of the assistant captains stood up in the dressing room. Bruce Boudreau didn't even really go in there and address the group. It was one of the assistants said, "That's enough. Let's go, boys." They ended up coming out, scoring 2 goals in the third, making a game of it. And that's when you really saw the passion in the players. They weren't very happy with themselves. It wasn't just, you know, some coach giving a fire and brimstone speech for the 8th time in a row and maybe starting to lose the group. You know, it was coming from within, and I think it was very poignant when the assistant captain, I forget his name too.
I think it was Brooks-like, wasn't it?
No, it was Knubel.
Knubel,
that's right. You know, that was real poignant too in how they wanted to end this slide. It was weighing on all of them. And you know, the unfettered access that you guys spoke of before I got on the air here, that HBO has had, has just been, as I said before, just been riveting. I think it's just been great. The bigger question though is, guys, I wonder what CBC is thinking these days when they're watching that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty funny. I mean, this is an American documentary, you know, but it seems like, you know, as Canadians, we're appreciating it just as much. Maybe it's the fact that most of these players are Canadian. No, I'm just kidding. But, Paul Edmonds, who is the voice of the Winnipeg Goldeyes here on sportsradio1290.com and sportsradio1290, the station, obviously, we appreciate you calling in, and Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the time. And I'm also a hockey dad.
All right.
Yeah.
Have a very Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you too. Happy holidays, boys.
Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break again here. We're at the end of the first hour already. Wow, it's actually really literally flown by. It's flown by my head. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back. We've got Brendan Leipzig of Team West at the World Under 17 Hockey Challenge that will take place here in Winnipeg coming up in about 17 minutes. You're listening to the special Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. It's a Weezer Christmas. Welcome back to the special Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on Sports Radio 1290. And sportsradio1290.com. Once again, we want to wish everyone out there a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Hopefully you're getting all the presents that you want or that you ask Santa for, but we have the best present for you, and that's a second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You like that one? Like that one, guys?
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to start off here. We're going to start the top hour off actually by making a special programming announcement. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show is actually going to be off next week, which is, of course, New Year's Day, January 1st. But we will be back the following week on Saturday, January 8th, and we're actually going to be starting at our new permanent time. We're going to actually be moving to 3 hours on Saturday, January 8th, and our new time will be 9 a.m. Central to 12 noon Central. So that's a special programming announcement for all of our listeners and fans of the show. So now we are going to talk about, you know, the main reason why this HBO documentary was produced in the first place, and that's for the Winter Classic, the Bridgestone NHL Winter Classic that will take place, Saturday, New Year's Day, which actually makes sense because there won't be an Illegal Curve Show, which means that we're all going to get a chance to go to Richie P's house, and watch this game. So the game actually takes place at noon, I believe, noon Central or noon Eastern on New Year's between the Pittsburgh Penguins and Washington Capitals. It's going to be played at Heinz Field. I think there's going to be 65,000 plus, 65, 70,000. Yeah. Michael doesn't have an exact number, but I think it's 65 or 70. You're a big NFL fan. You should know the seating, the capacity of all these stadiums.
I don't know the seating capacities. I can tell you maybe all the names.
67,000.
What you should know for sure, because for everyone who doesn't know, Michael is a huge Seattle Mariners fan. You should know the Safeco Field, the capacity of Safeco.
I don't know the capacity of Safeco.
You were there. You've been there.
That doesn't matter. I don't know the capacity.
You should know how many exact. You should know the exact number. I know the exact number of the MTS Center, 15,003.
That's because we live here and you hear about it all the time. How it's maybe is or is not NHL ready.
The answer to your question is it's 67,000 for hockey.
67. Okay, so 67,000 people right. are going to be watching this game. Now, Dave, as we mentioned before, you've been living in Michigan where you've been studying law, and there uh-huh. there was an outdoor game. Well, Michael. Taking apart the studio in here. that's okay. You have to make those adjustments. Mm-hmm. But Dave, there was recently a game called the Big Chill,
yep.
which took place at the University of Michigan.
Yep.
I believe there was 100,000.
113.
113,000. You know, I know.
611.
I know. You didn't go to the game.
No, I didn't go. I couldn't go.
But what was the talk in Michigan, as far as some of the people, on campus that were going to the game? What were people talking about it like it was the big event that it was?
Well, I mean, it probably would have had more conversation if the game was taking place in Lansing, which it wasn't. Obviously, right. It was taking place in Ann Arbor. But there's still a lot of that rivalry, even though Michigan State, something like the University of Michigan versus Michigan State is still, it's a huge rivalry. Even if one team is not necessarily competing, it's just a massive rivalry. And the game... conditions. It was really cold, like the last couple of weeks right. in Michigan. So the temperatures were actually very good for hockey. And the game, I mean, the game itself was a bit of a snoozer. I mean, it was a 5-0 University yep. of Michigan win. But, 113,000 people to get to. In fact, a lot of people in Michigan were saying that Michigan is now the true, hockey town USA as opposed to, or hockey state of, the state of hockey as opposed to Minnesota. I haven't lived there long enough to make that contention. But, to get 113,000 people out to the, which of course is the new Guinness record for
right.
most attended, which was previously held, from the prior.
Michigan State game
in 2001. Michigan State game,
right.
which was in East Lansing, Michigan. So.
Yeah, I don't think that record's ever going to be broken. I mean, wasn't there 70,000 at a game in Germany? But,
yeah.
I mean, I just don't know logistically if there is a stadium that can hold 130, like, the fact that a stadium can hold 113,000 in itself is pretty ridiculous. Like, that's one in six people in Winnipeg, if you think about it, right?
Yeah.
But if there's 700,000 people, one in six roughly. But, Michael, this game is going to be played, of course, in Pittsburgh, Heinz Field. It's not the coldest place, but it's also not the warmest place. You know, how do you think this game's going to play out based on the fact that, previous games in Edmonton, which were, I believe it was minus 35 or something like that in 2003, what are you expecting out of this game? Do you think it's going to be, a tight scoring game? Is it going to be entertaining? Is it going to live up to all the hype?
I think this, game, even if it's a close game or a blowout, I think it will live up to the hype. The scenery in Heinz Field is going to be awesome. There's going to be a lot of people. It's going to be outside. If it is cold, some of these guys, growing up maybe have not played, on outdoor ice. And you're going to see these guys, it's going to be funny. They're going to be bundled up. Balaclavas, toques. I don't know. The goalie's wearing the toques over the helmet.
Jose Theodore is probably the iconic picture. Remember the picture where he was blowing, I know Tim remembers that picture because he's a Habs fan, but that picture where he's, blowing the cold air with the toque on. Yeah. But continue on. I just thought I would paint a picture for our viewers.
I don't know. Especially with HD now, the game is going to look
3D.
Beautiful.
There's even 3D.
Is this game going to be broadcast?
I don't
think
so, but I mean, I was getting excited, but Blu-ray.
And especially, the build-up from the HBO special. If they do this HBO special every year in conjunction with the Winter Classic, at first, the Winter Classic might seem like a bit of a novelty, something that will go away and get old. But, hey, if they do that HBO thing every year, that'll be awesome.
Well, it's funny. We were talking about this when we met to prep the show. And, we had this discussion, whether or not we thought that, the NHL Winter Classic – because there's also a Heritage Classic,
right.
which will take place in Calgary. But the rumor, I think that it's here to stay. And then you guys were kind of on the fence, or you thought, you know, the same. But there's a rumor that New York is probably going to be the scene of the next game. What do you think? Do you think that's the next logical place, or do you think it may be, a lot of people have mentioned Toronto, Rogers Field?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of different things. Like, I think that the idea is that the Winter Classic will stay American. I think they'll keep the Heritage Classic with Canadian teams,
right.
And then I'm curious. Like, I read articles that said that possibly they could do it out west, and you know, why is the West being ignored for the Northeast and the Midwest? And the interesting thing is, like, going to your point about New York, I've read which teams they should play, because some people think that for next year it'll be the Rangers versus the Capitals. That way they can keep Ovechkin in the loop. And that, you know, they have a bona fide star. And then there's also, where would they play? Would they play at New Yankee Stadium or Old Yankee Stadium? Because the problem with
which one is bigger?
Old Yankee Stadium has torn down.
Sorry.
So Dave, what Michael's saying is, it's physically impossible for them to play
to do
there.
What I just suggested. No, but. Oh, then clearly my point doesn't make sense. But what I was getting at was the fact that they were talk about it originally. Sorry, that's what I meant to say. Was that they were originally going and it was going to be whether that would be the last event played at Old Yankee.
Yeah,
that's what they were considering. But then, of course, if you played at New Yankee Stadium, then you have the Rangers versus the Island. Would you have the Rangers versus the Islanders? Would that draw, or would that be like the Subway Series in baseball, which was more local and really most people didn't really care about it? You know what I mean? So it's interesting in that regard whether. Would have the two New York-based teams, or would you have the Rangers play a team with a star, like a Novichkin-style player?
You know, the way the Islanders have been going right now, it's probably best thing for hockey to keep them out of the national spotlight. I mean, yeah, they have Tavares and Matt Molson and...
Robbie Schrempf. Don't forget about Robbie Schrempf, former Illegal Curve contributor.
Friend of the show, Robbie Schrempf. Yeah. But no one wants to see the Islanders. The NHL is doing their best to market the game, and they want to put their stars in the
Rangers East. Devils, if anything.
Rangers Devils. The Devils, come on. I know you're a Devils fan.
No, but I mean, that's the rivalry there. But, okay, you know, there's something that I think we should touch on a little bit here. And that's another thing. Well, you know what? Quickly though, on your point though, I think that's a good point that you mentioned, Dave. By the way, another place that was mentioned was Dallas Cowboys Stadium, which would be a little bit weird. But I think I want to quickly touch on what Dave mentioned, because as the words were coming out of your mouth, Dave, I was thinking about that. I think what is really special about this game is that it's a spectacle, and I think the NHL should capitalize on that spectacular. Great use of words there. You know, element of this. And it's that this is an outdoor game. This is like a unique thing to hockey, that this is the Super Bowl for hockey.
In the States, probably.
As far as TV ratings goes,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, why not have the game in an Anaheim or an LA, have it outside on the beach? I mean, yeah, it costs a lot of money to have, I mean, obviously to have a, there are outdoor rinks in LA, by the way.
And not only that, as there is precedent, of course, because in 91, I think it was, they had the game in Vegas with,
right.
I think Gretzky played with the Kings and,
right.
I don't remember who they were playing.
It's a little bit weird to have a game, you know, people are thinking but visualize it. I mean, you have a game on the beach. I mean, yeah, you know, you have to bring in the special ice system to cool the ice, but it's a spectacle. I think it's cool. And I think that type of thing would draw big time in California, because California already has a good hockey history. There's four American junior players from California on this year's U.S. World Junior team, and I think they should embrace the fact that it's a spectacle. They can do something fun with it, is what I'm saying. Tim's giving me the baseball signals here, so we're going to take a quick break again. Coming right up, we've got Brendan Leipzig, Winnipegger Brendan Leipzig, who plays for the WHL's Portland Winterhawks and will be representing Team West at the 2011 World Under-17 Hockey Challenge. We're going to talk to him when we come back from the break. You're listening to the Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the special Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. For those listening on illegalcurve.com and sportsradio1290.com, we once again wish everybody out there a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Right now, we are going to be joined on the line by Brendan Leipzig from Winnipeg, who will be representing Team West at the 2011 World Under-17 Hockey Challenge. Brendan, are you there?
Yep.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays.
You too.
So The World Under-17 Hockey Challenge begins next Tuesday, December 28th. What kind of team-building activities has Team West done in preparation for this tournament?
Coach Garth Mitchell, he's been sending some emails out, and we've had some tasks to get in contact with some of the other players that we don't know and find some information about them and get some information that will get us better gelled or better get to know them. So that's what we've been doing so far.
All right, Brendan, what does it mean for you personally to be able to play in front of thousands of fans in your hometown?
Yeah, it's definitely a great opportunity, you know, being from Winnipeg, it's pretty exciting. For all the friends and family, they'll be able to come out to watch a game, to watch the games. It'll be pretty special.
So what type of goals or objectives have you guys set for the Team West heading into the tournament?
We want to win. We want to win the gold in front of the home crowd. I think nothing less should be expected from the group of guys we have.
You know, when this tournament lasts, it's the gold medal game is January 4th, so it lasts about about a week or so, give or take a couple of days. I don't want to do the math right now. But when the tournament is over, you are going to be going back to Portland, where you play for the Winterhawks. We wanted to ask you, what's the transition been like coming from the AAA Winnipeg Thrashers, playing going to the WHL, where obviously you're away from your friends, you're away from your family, and you obviously are playing a lot more hockey.
Yeah, you know, the first couple months was a big jump. Being away from the family was a big part of it, but I've got great billets down in Portland, and the coaching staff and the team has been really helpful making the adjustment. I've been having a lot of fun down there.
All right, so in Portland you play with Nino Niederreiter, who we all know is playing in the World Junior Hockey Championships right now. He's selected with the 6th overall pick in the 2010 NHL entry draft by the New York Islanders. What have you learned by playing and practicing with someone of his talent?
Yeah, the guys there that have been drafted, you just gotta learn from them. Their practice habits, they're always the hardest working guys on the ice in practice. Just their work ethics and their drive to keep getting better even after the draft has been really something to look up to and try to prove yourself also.
You know, Brendan, it's really common, you know, as people know, for the World Junior Championships, for Team Canada, you know, you have a lot of guys that are used to being, you know, the captain or the top scorer for their team, and they're playing different roles. You know, what is your role going to be for Team West in this tournament?
I couldn't really tell you right now. I think we've got a group of guys that any guy on the team could play any role, so it'll be up to the coach, Garth Mitchell, whichever line you'll play on and with the group of guys on your line. I think we'll pretty much explain your role, and I think any guy will accept their role on this team this year.
Well, we wanted to thank you for coming on Christmas Day here. And you guys play, Team West has their first game on Tuesday, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so we want to wish you good luck from everyone here at the Legal Curve Hockey Show, and we want to thank you again for taking the time out and joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, bye.
All right, well, that's great that Brendan came on here. Team West, will be, I think their first game is an exhibition game on the 28th, and I believe that is in Portage la Prairie. I might be wrong about that. You can check Hockey Canada's website, and I believe you can also find out that information on the MTS Center website. This tournament, it's the first time it's been in a big city like Winnipeg, and, if people don't know, the World Under-17 Hockey Challenge will be in Winnipeg this year and next year. The 2011 tournament and the 2012 tournament will be here. So go check it out. It's already been mentioned this tournament has featured, all the stars have played in this tournament. Jonathan Taves, Alexander Ovechkin, Mike Richards, the Sedins. I think pretty much every big star except for Sidney Crosby. I don't know why he didn't play in it. Was he in the NHL when he was 16? No.
I know he tried. Didn't he try out for juniors when he was 16? Like for the
15. 15, I think he was playing for, he played in the QMJHL. Who did he play in the QMJHL for?
Rimouski,
sorry. I was going to say Baie-Comeau. But this tournament is going to be very well attended in Winnipeg, and Portage la Prairie. The first few games are going to be, the first few, pardon me, regulate, re, uh, regulation games will be played at the MTS Iceplex, which is a new facility that was built for the Manitoba Moose, which is just outside the city. And then the medal games will be at the MTS Center. Are you guys going to be able to check it out? Are you in town?
Yeah, I'll be in town.
You in town?
Yeah. Hopefully I should be able to check out one or two games.
Well, let's go. I mean, we're actually we'll be going to the gold medal game with our hockey team, but I'm excited to see some of these players because all these guys are amazing talent, and a lot of these guys will be, you know, graduating to the World Junior Tournament. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we have some articles for On the Beat. We are going to do our, you know, favorite segment, and your favorite segment, hopefully, which is Rapid Fire. But we're going to, you know, take a little bit of a break here and then we'll be back. So you're listening to the special Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. It is currently 11:25 in the morning on Christmas Day. Merry Christmas to everybody who's listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, whether you're in your car, on your laptop, on your iPad, by the fire, by the Christmas tree. We appreciate you tuning in. We are unable to get Stan Fischler on the air. We were going to have him on in the first hour at 10:15. We hope everything's okay. We were going to talk about the New York Rangers with him. So, Stan, hopefully everything is going all right. And, you know, hopefully we'll get him on a future Illegal Curve show. We want to mention again, a programming announcement, here at Sports Radio 1290. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show won't be on the air on New Year's Day. But we will be back Saturday, January 8th at our new time, 9 a.m. to noon, which will be our permanent 3-hour spot here on Sports Radio 1290. So right now we are going to talk about 5 articles that we liked here on the Beat.
On the Beat.
On the Beat. I love that sound effect. Gets me pumped up. Can we play it again?
Yeah.
I put Tim on the spot here. I know we don't have to play it again, but if you did, I wouldn't mind. Third time? No, it's too much.
No, we're good, Ezzy. Let's go with the first article.
We should just play it over and over again. Okay, On the Beat, which is a segment we like to have here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, where we mention articles from beat writers. Actually, the articles that, you know, some of the articles that we picked this week aren't from beat writers, but they were just really good articles that we, you know, felt compelled to share. The first article we want to mention is from GQ, which, you know, isn't usually a magazine that you'd associate with hockey, but they put out a really good hockey article, and it was by Mary Rogan. And it was about Brian Burke, Maple Leafs general manager Brian Burke, and his late son Brendan Burke, and, you know, what it was like for their family, for the Burke family, you know, with Brendan, you know, coming out of the closet with his sexuality, and then, you know, with his passing, the accident that happened, and kind of what life has been like for the Burke family, you know, in the wake of Brendan's passing. I know that you guys read the article. What did you think about this? Because a big issue that's talked about in this article, which, by the way, is a big 5-page sprawling article, you know, a big issue is that, you know, people are looking to Brian Burke to speak up against, you know, homophobia in sport.
You know, I read this article and it was very riveting and moving. It really shows, you know, the struggles that Brendan had with his sexuality, you know, growing up and what it took for him to come out. And I find it quite, have the contrast of Brian Burke, this big, tall, you know, tough hockey guy, and now they have him, you know, talking about how he's speaking out against homophobia, and how he's been an advocate for, you know, for gay rights, marching in the gay pride parade. Really, you know, hopefully, you know, bring more players, you know, to come out and be more accepting of, you know, gays in sports.
Yeah, I agree with what Michael just said. I think at the same time, you're not going to have anyone coming out as a result of whether Brian Burke is speaking out or not. I think what he's doing is really good. I think it's important. I think you could get players in retirement, but you'll never, it's just, the mentality is just too foreign to the, idea of being open, and it would just cause, I mean, I don't really care personally, but like it's almost, you know, I hate to use the army analogy of don't ask, don't tell, which obviously was just repealed in the United States, but it just won't happen in a sports environment. I just can't see it, at least not now. it could happen, but it just it's a worthy struggle. But you know, it seems somewhat immaterial, anyways. To talk about that in the dressing room, and so I just don't see how that barrier would be broken by an active player. I mean, I'd be pleasantly surprised, but I'd be shocked if that ever happened.
Right, just so everyone knows, Brendan wasn't playing in the NCAA. He was managing Miami, Ohio. And I just wanted to quickly, you know, we have four articles here, but I just wanted to read one line from this, which is really, really, you know, pretty compelling stuff. Within weeks of Brendan's death, gay and lesbian advocates were reaching out directly for some of Brian Burke's candle power. It felt impossible to say no, but inside, Burke was floundering. "It's a comfort level," he says. "Before all of this, it was just a circle that I didn't move in. I didn't have any gay friends. I still don't, technically. It's not that I don't like it, but it's new territory, a learning process. I'm 55 years old. I've spent a lifetime acquiring habits. Before I went to the Pride Parade, I was thinking, good Lord, I'm a tough Irish Catholic hockey player with six kids. I have a truck. I chew tobacco. I hunt. I kill things." I just thought that was an amazing quote, you know, talking about how, you know, someone like him can even kind of soften up a little bit. But this is a really great article, and we recommend this, you know, everybody from Legal Curve recommends this article.
Yeah. And, you know, you'll be able to find the links to all these articles posted after the show on our website, www.illegalcurve.com.
Yeah, and Michael's done a great job, you know, hat tip to Michael. He posts all of these articles and more. There's usually more than enough reading for everybody, all the hockey fans out there. Okay, let's move on quickly to our second article here. And this comes from Tony Gallagher of the Vancouver Province. And this article is titled, "Once a Major Hit in the NHL, Goalie Steve Mason's a Big Miss." And this article, you know, the Vancouver Canucks recently thumped the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I believe Garon was in net. Steve Mason wasn't even net. But, you know, this article is just talking about how Steve Mason, you know, he's really struggled since that 10 shutout rookie season. And, you know, it mainly just talks about how he's gotten a little bit too cocky. And, you know, it's pretty famous now that Steve Mason came to camp overweight last year. And, you know, he makes a good point here that Steve Mason, you know, people should stop thinking that he's going to necessarily regain his rookie form and he might just be an average goaltender. But what did you guys think of this article?
You know, reading this article, you know, they compared him to other, you know, goalie one-hit wonders like Andrew Raycroft or maybe Jim Carrey, one of my all-time favorites. But I thought it was, you know, pretty interesting to talk about how he came in overweight. And, you know, Steve Mason will tell you that the weight, you know, wasn't a problem, but really it doesn't give you as much speed going across the crease. Maybe you won't be able to get up as fast. You might fatigue faster in the game. So when he came out his rookie season a few years ago, you know, we all thought this guy was awesome. We saw him for Team Canada, you know, in World Junior Hockey Championship, and he was great. So, you know, you'd like to think that, you know, the skill, he's shown the skill before, that he'd be able to show it again.
All right, and now we're going to move to our third article here quickly again. And the next article comes from David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. You know, if you have a chance, read his Cult of Hockey blog. It's a really good blog, and a lot of people read it. And he's been a good friend of Illegal Curve for a good time now. Dave Staples often, you know, provides statistical analysis. And the article that we've linked here is basically talking about Andrew Cogliano and Sam Gagne and why their production, you know, has been a little bit different. Neither guy has really put up eye-popping numbers this year in their third season. But, you know, Staples provides a nice little table here breaking down, you know, some plus and minus numbers where he talks about the amount of minutes that they play and, you know, the errors per minutes that they make and plus minus. And basically he's talking here about why, you know, Sam Gagne has been able to produce a little bit more than Andrew Cogliano and basically attributes it to Gagne's hands. Cogliano's a fast guy who can, you know, take forwards outside and then inside, but he's had some trouble, you know, finding the back of the twine. And, you know, both guys, as mentioned before, Tom Rennie and the Oilers staff would like to see a little bit more out of them. They've struggled and gone through, you know, scoring droughts. But what did you guys take from this? Do you agree with Staples that, you know, if Sam Gagne and Andrew Cogliano don't produce more, this team has no chance of making the playoffs?
You know, it's interesting. I really think Oilers Nation, more than any other team, does statistical analysis of every single facet of the game that they can. And having actually watched the Oilers play the Red Wings, it's interesting because I felt like I was watching a NHL team play a junior team. Like, that's really what it looked like. It was like the Red Wings completely outclassed Edmonton. It wasn't even close. That being said, I thought the Oilers were, you know, they're young, they're gelling. I mean, some of these guys are only in their third year, you know, so they're still learning the game. You know, not everybody's going to be Sidney Crosby. Not everybody's going to come out and have an amazing first year and keep it going. You know, I mean, you look at the guys who have good first years and they have the slumps, and these guys take time to develop. They're young guys. So, I mean, I like what Staples is writing, but my only concern is it might be, I don't want to say too soon because they have had a number of years to develop, but once this team gels into one, you know, once they have an identity, because right now they still don't have an identity. They're just a bunch of young guys who are learning the ropes.
Right.
And that's the problem, is it just seems like they're still trying to develop it. So once that team has that identity and each guy has almost like a defined role and they can get what they want, then we'll see if these guys can fill those roles. Right now, it's just too early because, again, it's like they're throwing them to the wolves. They're basically saying, what can you guys do as just – not individuals, but like, let's see what you guys can do. Let's see how you guys can develop in the NHL. Not how do you develop in the AHL.
I think your point is well taken, Dave, because, I mean, remember 3 weeks into the season when, you know, the chants were already coming out about should the Oilers send Taylor Hall back to junior? It's like, I mean, they've made the decision that they're going to keep an 18-year-old with the team and let him grow and let him see what it's like to struggle in the NHL. That is part of becoming an NHL player. Look at Vincent LeCavalier. Look at Joe Thornton. These are some of the best hockey players in the world. Go back, go to HockeyDB if you need to, or go to TSN and check their rookie stats. They didn't have very good rookie stats.
Right.
Not everyone can be an Ovechkin or a Crosby. It really is not a cliche. It's the truth. Those are special, almost once in a lifetime guys that have the skill at the junior level and then are instantly able to maintain that level. So you're right. And I think that, you know, it might be a little bit of a, you might be overblowing it a little bit to say that, you know, Cogliano's hands aren't as good as Gagne's when he only has six less points, really.
Right.
Gagne isn't exactly tearing it up. He's been playing well.
Yeah.
I mean, they've put Gagne with Eberle and Hall, and that line has actually probably been the best cohesive line. But you're right. I mean, in Edmonton, when the team isn't doing very well, these are the types of things that you have to pull out. But the fourth article we're going to bring up here is from the Toronto Star, and this was published on December 22nd. And once again, you know, for all these articles for On the Beat, we will link them on a legal curve. We try to bring you the articles that have shelf life, and all of these articles have shelf life. We're not going to, you know, give you an article that 2 days later you're going to say, well, why am I reading this? I already know this. This article is about a 12-year-old hockey player, and hold on, just let me find her name here. Kayla Watkins was her name. And she was playing at a pretty low level of minor peewee in Toronto on a boys' team. She's 12 years old playing on a boys' team. And basically, one of the parents on the hockey team drew up kind of an agenda or a contract. I'm not sure if this guy was a lawyer.
He was a lawyer.
He drew up a contract that basically said that her ice time should be limited because she hadn't shown improvements in the first 10 or 12 games of the season.
She was supposed to be an item to be discussed on the agenda.
Right. And this article was first appeared in the Toronto Star, and then Greg Wyshynski at Puck Daddy, you know, also posted it, and that's where I went to the original article. We're going to be posting the actual Toronto Star article. I know that you guys have read this article. How ridiculous do you think it is? Because, you know, as Michael mentioned, we're coaching, and there was a girl that was actually playing at the bantam level on the other team, and she was in there, and she was working hard, and you know, I'm not going to start the debate because I think we all agree that girls have the right to play with guys if they're good enough. What do you think, though, of a parent legally trying to limit the ice time? Because as it turns out, you know, go ahead and read this article, but it turns out she left the team, which I would, if I was her, you know, I would leave the team too, because it's very, very, very rude to do that and very, you know, embarrassing. So what do you guys think about this parent who tried to basically kick the girl off the team, so to speak?
You know, there's a lot of, we've all seen hockey parents out there, you know, that maybe take things a bit too far. Obviously, this parent isn't a coach and maybe needs to take a step back. This is minor hockey. It was A-level hockey. This guy really had no business doing this. I mean, these kids aren't going to make the NHL, and sometimes, you know, parents maybe need to step outside the box and take a look at what's really going on.
Yeah, no, you've got it right there. It's absolutely ridiculous, especially at a lower level. The axiom is that everybody plays the same amount. Everyone gets equal playing time. The last article that we wanted to mention, which will be linked on illegalcurve.com, comes from the National Post, and it's from Noah Love. And this article is about a week old, but it's timely. Basically, Noah Love interviewed, Chris Cuthbert and asked him 20 questions about Sidney Crosby's golden goal. You know, unless you've been living under a rock, Chris Cuthbert called the Team Canada, Team USA gold medal final from the 2010 Winter Olympics and had the famous golden goal, Crosby. That wasn't it at all. That didn't sound like it.
And also,
it was basically sounded more like Crosby, the golden goal.
Yeah, there you go.
That sounded more like it. Hopefully we'll have Chris Cuthbert on one day and he'll say it, but, read this article, that comes from the National Post. It's really interesting. They basically analyze the entire game and the goal, and it's really interesting. Did you guys want to mention anything about the article?
No, it was really good. You know, I have love listening to hockey announcers and play-by-play guys. And
yep.
He really talks about, what he was feeling and the feeling of the arena. You know, just being, the new year coming on, it's really good, to reflect on one of the top, hockey stories or sports stories of the year.
That's the second greatest goal in Canada history to Henderson, for sure.
Well, the interesting thing is you said everybody got to hear it. Well, for those of us in the U.S., we were listening to the NBC broadcast.
Emmerich.
Yeah, so we didn't actually hear it like that.
So Doc Emmerich was happy when Parise tied it up, but not so happy when Crosby scored.
Absolutely. So it was definitely different listening to it in the U.S., but let me tell you, the cheering I was doing was loud nonetheless.
Okay, so read those articles over the Christmas break. We are going to take a break, and we have our final segment coming up, your favorite segment, Rapid Fire. We have Cheers and Jeers. We're going to try to get a hold of Richie Pollock, usual analyst here on Illegal Curve. He's in Las Vegas. We're going to try to call him and get him on. You're listening to the special Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back. It's 11:44 here in Winnipeg at the Sports Radio 1290 studios. You're listening to the special Christmas edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have a special caller on the line, but before we get to him, Michael Remus has a special announcement about something that was mentioned last week on our show.
All right. Last week on the show, the first rapid fire question, we mentioned that the Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin were going to be on The Price is Right with the showcase of a trip to the Winter Classic. Infamously.
And a car. There was a car there.
And there was a car involved. So Ezzy bid $40,000 on this, and Richard bid $1, knowing that Ezzy would overbid. The actual retail price of that was $23,126. So, Ezzy, you were way over there.
Wow, that wasn't even close.
Hold on, now, does Tim have the sound effect for the when you go over?
Do you have any Price is Right special effects? Okay, we'll work on that. We'll have them next week, and maybe we'll have another showcase showdown. But now, without further ado, we have a special guest joining us from Las Vegas, Nevada, regular analyst of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Richard Pollock. Richie, are you there?
Hey now.
You've been on there for a little while, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
I heard you laughing a little bit when we were talking about the Price is Right thing. I knew
well,
you were there.
What do I win for that?
Well, I think you win maybe just the satisfaction of knowing that you were right, which you usually are.
I win a dollar.
Hey now, Richie, Merry Christmas. How has your trip in Las Vegas been so far?
Oh, it's been a great time so far.
Yeah.
Can't beat it watching the Knicks-Celtics game right now. And no, the weather's been good. The show's been good. No complaints here.
You're watching the Knicks and Celtics. Why aren't you listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show
on your iPad?
I didn't bring my iPad, first of all. But second of all, the internet here is like $400, so.
Okay, fair enough.
Fair enough. Okay, Richie, so we're going to have you on for a special trifecta, triumvirate, whatever you want to call it, three-way rapid-fire segment here. And
rapid-fire.
That wasn't my voice, by the way. So we're going to have you on for rapid fire, and then we're going to have to let you go for cheers and jeers because we just don't feel that you deserve a cheers and jeers. Okay, so the first topic here for rapid fire. This past Tuesday, it was announced that 10-year-old Jackie Evancho, a local singing sensation, and former Bare Naked Ladies singer Stephen Page will sing the American and Canadian national anthems respectively at the Winter Classic on New Year's Day at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. The question is, do you think Stephen Page is more excited about what this appearance could potentially do for his recently launched solo career, or do you think he is more excited to be surrounded by more white powder than he's ever seen in his life? Dave, I'll let you start off on this one.
I think he's going to be happy about what this could do for relaunching his solo career.
The safe answer, Dave.
I went with the safe answer.
You know, the one thing about solo careers are how many people can really split off from a group and then launch a solo career?
Paul McCartney didn't work.
didn't work.
I mean, he sold some albums, but I mean, he never duplicated his Beatles success. Richie, your thoughts?
I would have to go with the solo career too. I mean, yeah, who had Sting? Maybe Sting's a good example.
Oh, that's
he succeeded.
Example.
Sammy Hagar.
Richie, didn't you see Sting last night on the Strip?
Yeah, we partied together.
Dave wanted to ask you about something that you'll be attending today, Dave.
No, it was last night.
Oh, it was last night.
The matzo ball.
No, I didn't go.
You didn't go.
It was too early. I mean, it was off the Strip. It was a pain in the butt.
All right.
Just catching up on a little business instead. Okay, so number two. We are going to move to number two now. As part of the 2011 Winter Classic in Pittsburgh, an alumni game will be played between the legends of the Washington Capitals and the former stars of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Having perused the rosters, who are you most excited to see play, and who are you disappointed to not see on the roster? And I will start with Dave.
Definitely Rod Langway. That's my highlight. I love him for the Capitals. And I'm a little disappointed that even though he's playing over in the KHL, that no Jaromir Jagr. I have said to see 68 beside 66 would be quite exciting.
And I'd have to agree with that. I know that I'm supposed to just be narrating this, but it would be nice to see, it would be nice to see Jaromir Jagr because of the fact that he played for both the Capitals and Penguins.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
Michael.
Oh, you know, I'm excited to see the lines of Francis, Lemieux, Kevin Stevens. And I'm very, very pumped for Michael Pavanka on the Capitals. Kind of, you know, kind of disappointed that, you know, Tom Barrasso won't be there. You know, and I would like to see Joey Juno, but I know he's got some important business up north that he's taking care of.
Richie, who are you excited to see?
It's got to be Lemieux. I don't know if you guys saw him in the 24/7 this week.
Yep.
But they said his first time on the ice in something like four or five years, and his hands were unbelievable. He could still play in the league, for God's sake. And for this, Lemieux, I mean, obviously, it's a pretty obvious choice, but Lemieux for me.
And what about someone who won't be there? Do you have a chance to check the roster? Have you been too busy partying?
Is Peter Bondra on the roster?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Bondra is there, eh?
Callie Johansson isn't there.
Callie Johansson isn't there?
No.
What the hell is he doing?
Everyone remember Callie Johansson? Yeah. He was on the Capitals for a very long time. I think one guy who should have been...
Dale Hunter? He's got to be there.
No, sorry, Dale Hunter is not there.
No, he isn't.
Oh, there you go, right there. You mean you need somebody who's going to injure somebody after a goal, like he did Pierre Turgeon.
Okay, just quickly, we're going to move on to number three here, but what about Jimmy Pack?
Jimmy Pack, 32, number 32, is that a number?
Won two cups in Pittsburgh.
There you go.
Peter Taglianetti will be there. People will remember him in Winnipeg from his Jets days. Okay, so number three, Washington Capitals rookie forward Andrew Gordon scored his first National Hockey League goal on Tuesday night in a game versus the New Jersey Devils. So that's surprising. After the game, Sidney Crosby, who played hockey with Gordon in Nova Scotia between the ages of 10 and 15, sent his former teammate a congratulatory text. If you could send or receive a text from any one hockey personality, who would it be, and what would you want to text them, or conversely, what would you want them to text you?
Oh, you know, if I were to be receiving a text, obviously it would be from the great one, Wayne Gretzky. You know, maybe after you finish a good meal or something like that, take a good nap and just like, hey, you did a great job out there.
How would he know about that, though? You'd have to text him first so he would know you were napping.
This is a hypothetical question.
Oh, it is. It is. You're right. You're right. This
rules don't apply here.
You are right. Dave, same question. Hopefully different answer.
I would have to say maybe, you know, I'd want to have some sort of interplay with Jeremy Roenick similar to his exchange with Patrick Waugh. And, you know, talk. Maybe he'd ask how my jock got up in the rafters, and I would say my Stanley Cup rings are blocking my ears. You know, like it would have to be some sort of play like that.
Richie, who are you texting?
Oh, Patrick Kane. We could, you know, drive around in limos with our shirts off, party with, like, semi-good-looking Vancouver girls. Like, he texts me that, you know, he wants one of them, and I would for sure be Patrick Kane. You're that guy.
Richie,
pictures in the limo.
By the sound of your voice, it sounds like you were riding around in a limo with AP and Sam G last night.
I may or may not have been.
Okay, so we're going to move ahead here to number four. In the spirit of Christmas Day and jolly old St. Nick, it is time to determine who has been naughty and who has been nice. If you could give out one candy cane and one lump of coal to anyone in the hockey world, so you give out one candy cane, one lump of coal, who would it be and why? Michael, I'll start with you.
I'm going to start. This is easy. Lump of coal. I'm giving it to Ilya Kovalchuk. I can't stand this guy right now. Not only is he killing the New Jersey Devils, he's killing my fantasy team.
Right. He's killing a lot of people's fantasy
teams. He's killing
a lot
of people's fantasy teams. Yeah. I think he's career over a point per game average, and now he's about doing 0.5. This guy, hopefully, you know, he can pick it up in the second half, but he really deserves a lump of coal.
And who are you giving your candy cane to?
My candy cane, I got to give it to Jonathan Toews. He's had an unbelievable year representing Winnipeg, winning the Stanley Cup, winning the gold medal.
He has a lake named after him
got,
now.
He got a lake named after him. I'm going to give him props. That was an easy one for me.
David.
My love, Bacol, goes to the Council of Glendale for signing that deal. I mean, it's just the most atrocious deal that you could ever sign, and it's just insane. And my candy cane would go to Mike Green for improving his play, which, as Michael would say, has now helped my fantasy team. So that's my lump of coal and my candy cane.
Richie, what about yourself?
You know what we could have done? We could have done candy canes with lump of coal instead of cheers and jeers.
Oh.
That would have been more creative. But I like this. This is good. My cheer, because this is for the whole year, my cheer is going to go to Sidney Crosby because he is the most dominant player in the world and has left Alexander Ovechkin in the dust in terms of his play and everything else he brings on and off the ice. My lump of coal goes to Colin Campbell. I just don't think he's done a good enough job this year with discipline, never mind the whole story with the comments about Mark Savard. That was years ago. I just don't like the inconsistency with which he hands out discipline. I think that the players still have no clue what's coming when there's a serious infraction.
Fair enough. And we're going to continue on kind of with our year in review because, as we mentioned before, we're not going to be on the air on January 1st. We'll be back at on January 8th at our new time.
Have you told the fine people about our extended show?
Yes,
forward?
I have. The listeners, Richie, if you were listening, you would have known that. I've already mentioned
it. I knew it was a risky question to throw out there, but I figured I would.
Richie, you know what? Your partying is affecting people back in Winnipeg. You're being very inconsiderate. I'm just kidding. But we're going to continue with kind of our year in review here. Sidney Crosby's Olympic goal notwithstanding, what was your favorite on-ice hockey moment of 2010? Richie, I'll let you start.
That's a really good question. I think probably the Patrick Kane goal in Game 6, I mean, another obvious one, but the fact that nobody was sure if it went in, he's dancing around the ice, half his teammates are worried to cheer because they're not sure if they actually won the cup or not, and then the subsequent celebration. I just thought that, like, Game 6 between two, story franchises, and it was a great final, and it was a hyped-up final. I thought that was the goal of the year.
I'll let Dave and Michael quickly give their favorite moment, but I got to say, what's with your all of a sudden love of Patrick Kane? You're in Las Vegas, now all of a sudden every answer to every question here is Patrick Kane, Rich.
That's true. I don't even like Patrick Kane.
I was going to say, in fact, I believe he's on my fantasy team, so keep propping him up. But I would probably have to say for my moment of 2010 is the Hawks ending their Stanley Cup drought. I think that was quite a testament to the fact that they've rebuilt the franchise, or they had rebuilt the franchise quite nicely through drafting, and so them ending the 2010 season with the Stanley Cup was a nice moment.
Michael, favorite on-ice hockey moment?
My favorite on-ice moment was probably the Olympics as a whole. I loved watching these world-class players play every night, the fastest-paced hockey that you've ever seen. No commercial breaks, no TV timeouts, just up and down. My favorite game of that of the Olympics was the Slovak-Russia game, went into a shootout. That was one of the most exciting games of the tournament.
That was a great game.
Okay, boys, we have one more rapid fire here, and this is going to be open to everyone here, whoever wants to jump in first. Looking ahead as either a hockey fan or analyst, what is your number one hockey-related New Year's resolution for 2011?
All right. I say this every year, but I think it's really important for me to get out, and experience the outdoor ice more. I always say, oh, I'm going to play outdoors, but I, love to play hockey. I got to get outside. It's just great to work on your skills, work on your puck handling, work on your skating. Really good. Even for all you young kids listening out there, as Don Cherry would say, really important to go and just go and futz around.
We should go after the show. I'm down. Dave, are you down?
No, I'm not down, unfortunately.
Richie, what's your number one resolution as you sit by a pool in Las Vegas sipping Mai Tais? What is your number one hockey resolution for 2011?
Well, Reba said a great one. I was actually thinking I have to start playing more outdoor hockey this year. But Ezzy, I'm gonna say that my resolution is combined with you this year, and it's the team that we're coaching. Hopefully, make it all the way.
Yeah, well, we won our first game in the tournament. By the way, thanks for not returning my email. I emailed Richie, 2 days ago that we won, asking him to check the show plan. You didn't respond. Anyways, I know you have better things to do.
The data charges that I would incur by opening that email.
Okay, the data charges.
You didn't qualify the fact that you sent four emails, one of which said in the subject line, Las Vegas, bruh.
Okay, David, I'll give you a chance here to answer that final question. So as a fan or analyst, what maybe is something that you want, you're hoping for yourself to, I guess, resolve in 2011?
I believe it would be a team returning to Winnipeg and sitting in the stands at the MTS Center enjoying NHL hockey again. That's probably the best I could hope for next year.
Okay, so Richie, we're going to let you go. That's the end of Rapid Fire. We're going to quickly get through cheers and jeers because we've only got about 3 minutes left. But I know you're going to be back in 2 days. You'll be back on Monday, right?
Yeah, back Sunday. Back tomorrow night.
Oh, you're back Sunday night. Okay, yeah. So we thank you for joining. Thank you for coming on the air.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Timmy told me it was a great show, so I'll make sure to listen and download it when I get back on iTunes. Yeah,
okay, thank you. Thank you, Richie, and we'll see you in a bit.
Bye.
Okay, Tim, do we have enough time for cheers and jeers?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Okay, so we're going to do cheers and jeers right now. We'll quickly cue up the sound effect.
Cheers and jeers.
Okay, guys, I am going to first give it to Dave quickly. Let's do cheers and jeers because we have only got about a minute left. So who are you cheering on Christmas?
I'm cheering the Manitoba Moose for their charity work going and delivering presents to the Children's Hospital and anyone who does charity work at this holiday time.
Very good cheer. Dave, what's your cheer or jeer?
I'll give a cheer to Brian Rusin for finishing her second half of dentistry.
Very nice cheer. Tim, you've got a mic. Who are you cheering or jeering?
I'm going to cheer the Montreal Canadiens.
That's because as people don't know, our producer Tim is a huge Montreal Canadiens fan, and Montreal Canadiens are in the thick of a playoff race.
Yeah.
Third in the East?
Third place, yeah.
Third in the East? Okay.
Up on Boston, 2 points.
They're good. Carey Price is playing well. I'm going to cheer the host. Someone who we haven't heard of at all in the 2 hours today is Drew Mandel. We haven't heard him. He's in Kentucky right now on his way to Costa Rica shortly, but we have to give out a huge cheer to Drew Mandel. He's an engaged man now. Drew Mandel has tied the knot with his longtime girlfriend, Laura.
Was that a cheer or a jeer?
That was a cheer.
Oh, okay.
That was a cheer, Drew. So we love you, Drew. We'll see you in about, when's Drew back? A couple days after January 1st. So we'll see you when you get back, Drew. Michael has something to say here.
Oh, keep in touch with Illegal Curve. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/IllegalCurve, and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
Everybody, thank you for joining us. That's going to do it. It's 11:59 here. We'd like to thank Brendan Leipzig for coming on the show. We'd like to thank producer Tim. We'd like to thank Paul Edmonds, who joined us. We'd like to thank David and Michael filling in for Drew and Richard. And that's going to do it. We will not be on the air on January 1st. As we mentioned earlier, we'll be back January 8th at our new 3-hour time, beginning at 9 a.m. Central Time. So have a happy holiday. Have a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And that will do it for another show, here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So have a Merry Christmas. Good afternoon. Good luck.